This is the May 12 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Dale Durkles of Grain Cycles out of Bloomington, Illinois, Merrill Crowley of AgTraderTalk.com from Watseka, Illinois, and John Zanker of Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online at willag.org, W-I-L-L-A-G.org. Dale Durkles, will begin with you today to talk about some of these numbers from the United States Department of Agriculture and how they will be worked into the marketplace or what real difference they make. Given the number of new crop WASIs that you've seen in the month of May over the years, how important over time is this particular set of numbers that comes from the United States Department of Agriculture? And do they last throughout the season, generally speaking, or are there lots of changes yet to come?
Let's say two things first up. Number one, there are lots of changes yet to come. That's without a doubt, because we really at this point don't know, you know, what kind of forecast numbers we can realistically talk about looking ahead at months as we get closer to the new crop itself. The other thing I will say, you know, the wheat numbers are probably light years better than the corn and the beans, because wheat, we've got our first estimate, at least, of the new winter wheat crop, which is the bulk of the wheat we produce here in this country. So they have a better idea on the supply side of the equation. But again, as far as demand, you still have a lot of uncertainty and a lot of unknowns.
Well, let's start with the corn today. I think the number that jumped out at me and you'll have some discussion points and other things, was I usually use the season's average cash price to get an idea of really where things might stand currently and going forward. USDA has the new crop season's average cash price by the time we get to the fall of 2024 at $4.80 a bushel. That seems stunningly low. But they also have an ending stocks at 2.222 billion bushels, which is really quite large. What'd you make of those numbers?
Yeah, you really have to understand, you know, when you look at that seasonal average cash price, you know, by the time we get to the end of the marketing year, it's the weighted sum total of all those monthly USDA prices we get on the Ag Price Report. It comes at the end of the month, you know. Here at this point in time, we're basically using a model-driven projection to come up with that season's average cash price, which is really kind of contingent and based off of the 2.2 billion bushel carryout number we have there for the corn itself. So, you know, that really can change over time once we get a better feel for what kind of supply number we do have, what kind of demand base are we looking at going forward. But when I looked, you know, at the S&Ds for corn, even with the 2.2 billion number there, you know, the number that jumped out at me is, you know, they took their demand down to around 13.7 billion bushel. And to me, that's a little on the soft side at this early a point, but they also have models and looking at things around the world to give them reason to think that it could be soft going forward, too.
Yeah, so that's the 13.7 for the old crop. They're demand for new crop at what, 14.4, but still they've just got a big number at the end of the year. Part of that is trend yield and the number of acres they expect producers to put into the ground. What other things did you see in those corn numbers?
Well, you know, again, the new crop numbers, you know, for everything there, you know, it's purely a model-driven game at this point. I guess the one thing I'm going to be watching going forward is what we see as far as feed and residual demand, as far as old crop and new crop, and even export numbers themselves too, because, you know, the old crop corn exports we know are kind of dismal, and you know, even though the new crop corn export number is, again, a model projected number at this point, they also look at, you know, the whole matrix of all these supply demand numbers from all countries around the world, you know, but do we end up living up to those early season export forecasts? And I guess the few questions are going to be drawn at this juncture, looking at what we may be seeing as far as the old crop export demand number, and is that going to carry forward into the new crop year very far?
What should producers make of the figures as they are thinking about old crop sales left to be done for corn that's in the bin, whether that's at the elevator and the interest rates that we currently have, or on farm storage? Do they need to move it sooner rather than later now?
I think it's sooner rather than later, but I don't think it's on this break at this point. You know, when I go back to where we are cyclically, and that only tells us about time, not price, you know, we're still in this window here where we can be putting in a 20-week low at this juncture. And so I think somewhere along the way, we're going to have people get a little anxious upon weather here, especially as we delve a little bit deeper and get planting a little further and see how moisture situation looks in June and in July. And the other thing that may help corn a little bit is the strength finally we're seeing in wheat. And I really can't emphasize that enough. The wheat production estimate and the wheat numbers themselves may argue that, you know, we really need to see wheat prices move up. And as wheat prices move up, that will in itself tend to help demand for corn as we move through this summer period in time. So we should get a little bit of a lift, both old crop and new crop. I'm really not too anxious about selling down here. I don't have an upside number to work with yet as far as what I would target. We need to find a low before we can start talking about how much of a rebound we can get, but I'm just real hesitant to want to make sales right now.
Yeah, USDA making note that some of the losses in the hard red winter wheat growing regions in their tables for all wheat made up by the soft red winter wheat next week. The Illinois Wheat Association will be out in the southern part of the state taking some samples and getting a better idea of what the wheat crop looks there, though I'm told it looks very good. And the Wheat Quality Council will be out for the Kansas Wheat Tour that takes in parts of Oklahoma as well next week. Big wheat week next week. They have a season's average cash price for the new crop from USDA at 89. Their projected yield for all wheat at 37.1. That compares to the 35.5 from last year and the 37.1 that was put in the stable in the 21-22 growing season. You suggest wheat is important. Is it mostly driven by what's happening with hard red winter wheat, or is this part of the Ukraine-Russia event and a global issue?
Well, it can be a little bit of a mix of all three there at this point. You know, yeah, the Ukraine-Russian thing and the uncertainty we have right now about, you know, a shipping deal where Ukraine can move some inventory out as we go forward over the next number of months. And that story seems to be changing on a daily basis right now. So there isn't any way to really project it. Wheat balances worldwide, you know, we aren't really flush with wheat out there. We aren't necessarily terribly short. But, you know, when you look here at the U.S. specifically, you know, the real story is, what about the hard red winter wheat? We started out with a number here today, 514 million bushel. That was well underneath what the trade was looking at. I haven't had time to really go back into a lot of the details yet, but I'm really going to be looking at their abandonment numbers. I think that's probably really the important question there. And then we also have to look at the hard red spring, because those two are competitive in the bread making industry. We really need to go, how much wheat are we going to get planted up there? What kind of potential yield can we have out of spring wheat? And, you know, this is a story that's not told yet, you know, one that's going to unfold over the next 2 to 3 to 4 months.
Anything on the soybeans that jumped out at you?
Oh, nothing really huge at this point. You know, the one thing I think about with beans, you know, more than anything else, is the old crop, not the new crop. And I continue to be disappointed by wheat export numbers that we're selling here out of the U.S. and our sold not shipped category on old crop beans is extremely low on a historical basis. So, you know, I'm really kind of looking at the beans and going, you know, why aren't we seeing that export number come down as far as the old crop beans are concerned, which really translates right into why aren't those ending stocks for old crop beans starting to ratchet up at this juncture? And that'll have some ramifications on over into new crop. Beans, interestingly enough, from a technical perspective, as we get right into the end of May, better in the early part of June. I'm due to put in a 32-week low. So somewhere along the way in here, I think we're going to put in a bottom and bean prices.
Thank you very much.
Good talking to you.
Dale Durkles is with Grain Cycles out of Bloomington, Illinois. Now let's turn our attention to Merrill Crowley. He is with AgTraderTalk.com from Watsika. Hi, Merrill. Thank you for being with us. What were your impressions of the numbers, and can you go through some of them that you think were the most important from the USDA WASDE figures this morning?
Well, yeah, first of all, thanks for having me on, Todd. This is kind of my first time to go through a report. So for the old crop, we had corn ending stocks at 1.417 with the trade at 1.366. Soybeans were 215 million with the average guess at 212. Wheat was 598 with the average at 603. So not a lot of difference. Probably the biggest is mostly with the corn stocks, and a lot of that came off of the exports. So then with the new crop, we have 2.222 billion bushels versus the average guess of 2.094. Soybeans, 335 million versus the average guess of 293, and wheat, 556 with the average guess of 602. So wheat was the only thing really bullish with that, and that's probably our largest difference was the new crop versus trade guesses. The U.S. world carryover came in at 312.9 for the old crop. The average was 307.5 for the guess. Soybeans, 122.5 million versus the average guess of 108.10. And then the wheat was 264.34 with the average guess at 259.7. Not much difference there to really get too concerned about. Brazil corn, 130 million versus the average guess of 126. The soybeans, 155, an average guess of 154.9. Argentine corn, 37, average guess of 34.9. We're about 3 million, I think, higher on that. And the beans at 27, I think they're around 24, and the trade was at 24.4. So production was in line with what they had put out on the planting intentions. They did stick with the 181.5. A trend yield for corn, which was a little surprising, I should say. So, and the other thing I thought was kind of surprising was feed use for the new crop corn. It's pretty large. That is kind of interesting when you look at the amount of livestock, the fact that maybe people aren't going to have that many cattle to feed out. The other side of the thought pattern then is, okay, we got these prices. They came out with 480 for new crop versus the old crop at 660 on the USDA report. If you got those type of price differentials, you're going to want to walk that crop off the farm through livestock rather than try to sell the grain. So that's kind of a quick synopsis. Ending stocks, let's see. We had a 75 million increase from the April report. Over time, the stocks are the third tightest year over year for the old crop. The 23-24 ending stocks are the third largest to start the marketing year. Marketing year production for the new crop was the second largest on record to start the marketing year. That was compared to 2021. For soybeans, ending stocks saw a 5 million increase from the April report. That's the first increase since 2019-2020 marketing year, and it's tied for the smallest increase to happen from the April report. The new crop ending stocks for beans in line with the 14-15 marketing year stock. Stocks to use lineup items saw a 1.1% increase. And then the old crop wheat items saw no change. Old crop ending stocks remain the tightest year over year, and new crop ending stocks are the second tightest year over year. New crop demand over time is the lowest on record. That's it for my quick synopsis from the USDA.
Yeah, so given all the numbers that you've gone through and some of the impressions that you've given us, and maybe there are some more from the report, you can talk about those. However, what is it that we look forward to now or that you're looking forward to in this coming few months?
Well, to me, when I look at this market, it doesn't seem to me like we have really any weather premium in the market. And I understand we're getting great planting progress. We've got pretty decent weather. But we also have a couple of things out there that could really cause some significant problems. We are seeing a dryness in out west, and that's not going away very quickly, even though we have some rains. The next thing in line is we got El Nino coming in, and I've seen three articles now, one from the NOAA and one from AccuWeather, and they are talking about the concern of the warm water that is coming up to the surface, and they are concerned that that warm water will translate into hotter than normal temperatures on land. If you're hot and wet, things will be excellent. If you're hot and dry, the crops will die. So weather is going to be key. I'm thinking they need to turn their attention more to weather, maybe not right away, and that we always have some sort of weather rally. And in that idea, if you take the lows and you take the average weather rally that I've seen in past rallies, and I took the lows as of the closing this morning, the morning break, because we've made new lows since then. July corn has a potential versus the average rally is 659. East corn average is 591. Now, if you just take the low rally, the potential for these corn is 556. July soybeans, based on their average rally in the past year, is 1659, and no soybeans, 1479. And if you take the smallest rally, it could get no beans back to 1355. As far as lows go, I think beans could see a low here. We've got an old low at 1217, and of course, round numbers tend to support. I'm kind of hoping the new low that they made here recently will hold for the rest of the day. So far, the corn low has been holding. And again, it would be nice to see that hold. It just looks to me like this might be the biggest, highest crop that we could be looking at. And so you are really going to take the chance that the weather will come in here and push prices higher. I'm not suggesting that the weather's going to come in and maybe kill the crop. I'm suggesting that we always have a weather rally, and with the tightness of the old crop, that we could see a bigger move than, say, average that we've seen in the past.
To put some of that weather into context of the current crop year, there is, of course, a drought in Missouri that extends to the western border of Illinois. And this morning, during a conversation I had with Trent Ford, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey, he told us that in Quincy, Illinois, they have received one half of the normal amount of rainfall since the month of March to today. Now let's move on to a couple of other things. Are the outside markets also being discounted in this marketplace, in your opinion?
We have seen that take place, and the dollar's up again 600 and some points today. So the macro market could end up causing problems. We saw that. We saw that push lower when we had the concern about the Silicon Valley Bank and the other two banks that we had a run on. And the news media is certainly pushing a run on banks. My personal thoughts were that we are seeing money come out of a lot of these banks going into money funds where they can get 4 or 5% versus 0.5% to 0.75% at the banks. And yes, that's going to take things out. And the final thing will be is that lending is going to get very tight and very difficult. And we're seeing that starting to affect business. Businesses are starting to hurt from the fact that they can't get the loans they want. And even if they can, they're having to pay quite a bit more for that money. In reality, we had free money too long, and it's caused people to do some stupid things. And now we got to clean that up.
Anything else before I let you go?
I would think that anything that might be abandoned wheat would more likely now look at going to beans. The morning break, our corn soybean ratio was 2.43, up from the 2.23 the last time I was here on WLL on March 23rd. So I would think that might encourage beans. The way that we're planting beans at the same time we're planting corn, I'm not sure the old adage is that easier planting gets more corn acres. the time will tell.
Hey, thank you very much, Merrill.
Thank you for having me on, Todd. I hope everybody gets their rally and gets everything set in profitable prices.
That's Merrill Crowley. He is with AgTraderTalk.com. And now let's turn our attention to John Zanker with Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana. Hi, John. Thank you for being with us. Of course, we've talked a lot already about the numbers from the United States Department of Agriculture this morning, those WASDE figures, but I'd like to hear your take on them and what were the primary clues that you got out of it. What did you think?
Well, going in, I didn't see too many possibilities that the USDA was going to give us anything good for corn. There's just nothing been going on good there. That second Brazilian crop's looking good. USDA raised that number a little more than trade expectations. Exports have really been highly disappointing. And, you know, we've had a really good planting pace so far. So I'm sure that gave them the incentive to put that yield at 181.5. And I don't think that's out of line, all things considered at this point. So, you know, soybeans, that's where the disappointment came for me. I didn't really see anything terribly out of line on the new crop. But this old crop, I think you can go back to the April supply and demand and wonder why they didn't pick up some of that difference in the stocks report. I was expecting maybe a 20 to 30 million reduction in that ending carryout, and that certainly would have helped us at that time on the old crop and kept that new crop carryout down under 300. So wheat, unfortunately, we don't grow a lot of wheat in Indiana and Illinois, at least in the northern half. So wheat was kind of supportive, but we've run out of steam there on markets as well. So nothing really that we can hang our hats on here and feel good about, Todd.
It looks like farmers, at least in the eastern Corn Belt, will not have an issue putting the rest of the crop in the ground. They can turn their attention to marketing again more fully, something that never quite leaves their mind, but they do get busy. What have you and the rest of the office there at Risk Management Commodities been talking about as it relates to how to manage the risk in new crop for corn and soybean?
Well, it's getting difficult. You know, we've just the funds have just really laid into this corn market. And, you know, after today are probably going to be pushing 600 million bushels short, which I don't know what the record is for this point on the calendar, but we've got to be close. So it's just been brutal. Commodities in general, it's been a rough month, and it's not getting any better. If you have 85% of revenue plan, crop insurance, that gives you a 502 support price. We're sitting here at 508. So I'm not sure what we do at this time of the year, Todd. I don't think we'll be doing anything specifically. I don't think we'll be selling into this anytime soon. One of the things that I have pointed out several times in the past few weeks is 16 out of the last 16 years, we've eventually seen December futures go back above the spring crop insurance price, which was 591. 16 out of the last 16 years, and that occurred most often in the spring, but also in the summer, all the way out to real late summer in early September. I think one year even in October. So the odds are with us that we will come back and we'll see a rebound. I think there's a chance for a weather scare. We're starting to see some forecasters throwing out the possibility of a hot and dry June, July period. So, you know, that's not being traded at this point, with the funds being carrying the biggest short position that we can remember in a very long time, certainly at this time of the year. I think there's some fireworks potentially there now. And maybe going back 40 years, maybe 80% of the time, we would come back and certainly have a good, strong second chance of getting some things done. So the odds for three chances aren't very good. So any kind of significant rebound on a weather scare we're going to have to make some major moves on this new crop.
Make major moves on the new crop, but that also means producers probably will be hesitant, though they'll have crop insurance to make up for any potential yield losses that would be yet to come to market a full crop. Are there other things that they ought to do beyond count on crop insurance? And you've already given us that number, of course. It's not 591, it's 591 times your coverage. I'm wondering what they can do in the marketplace to make themselves feel more at ease if they lean into sales.
As far as right now, we could make some forward sales and cover with a call option, call spread. I'm reluctant to buy puts at this level. By the time you pay that premium, go down a strike or two, you're well below the crop insurance guarantee. Now, if you have 80% coverage, obviously that number's a little bit lower. So I'm reluctant to do any of that yet. I'm a little bit more willing to say, hey, the odds are greatly in our favor that we'll have a rebound. And again, there are some indications on the extended weather maps that we could see a hot, dry stretch form sometime in the next 4 weeks and carry into July. So we've had scares in most of the past 5-6 years, and they've tended to end, at least the first time, in June, and then a dry period set back in August in several of those years, and we got bounced. So it could be the summer that El Nino comes back. It looks like that's going to happen. The timing of that will be huge. If it's late in the summer, we could get stuck here in a neutral area between the La Nina and El Nino, and that's what's maybe showing up on some of these maps, that a neutral, and so at times has led to a stretch of hot and dry. So, you know, I'm willing to roll the dice a little bit on that right now, just because we've taken so much out of this December corn market and November beans, and they're getting hit hard again today.
Hey, thank you, John.
Thanks for having me, as always, Todd.
John Zanker is with Risk Management Commodities out of Lafayette, Indiana. He was joined on this May 12 edition of Commodity Week by Dale Durkles of Grain Cycles out of Bloomington, Illinois, and AgTraderTalk.com's Merrill Crowley from Watsika, Illinois. You've been listening to Commodity Week from Illinois Public Media. Find it online, listen to it on demand anytime you'd like at willag.org, or search it out in your favorite podcast application. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.
From the Illinois State Water Survey at the University of Illinois Prairie Research Institute, this is Illinois State Climatologist Trent Ford. Warmer weather moved in this week, with average temps from the low 60s in northern Illinois to the low 70s in southern Illinois. 7-day average temperatures were 3 to 8 degrees above normal across the state, the first week with consistently above normal temperatures since mid-April. Speaking of April, last month was officially the 37th warmest April on record at 53.4 degrees on average. Multiple series of storms moved through the state last weekend, bringing rain to most areas. The heaviest rain stayed in tight bands, which made for some serious disparities in rainfall totals. One band of 2 to 3 inches stretched along Interstate 74 from Peoria to Champaign, while areas 10 to 20 miles north and south picked up closer to 1 inch total. Another band of 3 to 5 inches stretched from Macomb to Taylorville, and areas around Chatham and Sangamon County picked up nearly 8 inches total. The first inch or so was welcome to tamp down on dust and give emerging corn and beans a good drink. Meanwhile, parts of northeast and western Illinois saw much lesser totals, persisting drier than normal conditions that go all the way back to the beginning of March. In fact, Quincy has had just over 3 inches of precipitation since early March, the second lowest total over that period since 1953, and less than half of normal. The dryness in western Illinois spurred the expansion of moderate drought in this week's U.S. Drought Monitor, while some places not too far across the river in Missouri have been downgraded to severe drought. We'll have an active weather pattern throughout this weekend with multiple shots of precipitation. Forecasted totals are mostly between a third and one half of an inch, but isolated pockets of larger totals are possible. The rest of the week looks to be much drier, with temperatures closer to, if not slightly below, normal. Outlooks for the second half of May all lean to drier than normal conditions, with near to below normal temperatures. Some parts of the state will really need to pick up on rainfall a bit as we move towards the summer, but at least the milder temperatures for now aren't stressing young crops too much at this point. This is Illinois State Climatologist Trent Ford wishing everyone a happy, healthy weekend.